हरि
As already explained in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, either direct bhakti yoga or the means which ultimately culminate in bhakti yoga without any tinge of fruit of activity constitutes the highest form of religion. So, see, because we'll take that if the point is without the tinge of fruit of activity means that this is the intent. What this one is trying to do is attain pure devotional service. Right? That's what one's trying to accomplish. It doesn't mean that one by habit is not doing things that aren't necessarily ideal. It means your intent is that, and you're trying to keep it to that. Therefore, this indirect, direct or indirect. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Plus, when we try to connect the indirect, it should be because of the purpose of pure devotion. But if we're connecting it because you get better benefit by doing anything in connection to the Lord, so therefore the fruit of activity will go better, which is true, but you're not doing it because of that. Was that what I said? Like that. So that's given up, because that's the Sakam Karma Yoga. So we saw the Acharyas mention Nishkam Karma Yoga. That's kind of the lowest that the Bhagavatam drops down to. Because lower than that, it's not that effective. Of course it's effective, and it's better than whatever may be found within the material world. But the point is it's still not up to the standard of what is going to be dynamically get you back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Right? Because dynamic, we're talking about doing it in this lifetime. You know, you want to stretch it out, hey, you know, then it's up to you. Yes.
So it means this sentence is not about Nishkam Karma?
It's not about?
Nishkam Karma?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Either direct bhakti yoga or the Nishkam Karma Yoga. Because Nishkam means there's no desire for result. But it doesn't mean that... But Nishkam doesn't necessarily mean that you have, attachment or, you know, this kind of element to Krishna. It means we're still going on, conditioning is still there, but the intent is pure. So it's recommending basically direct bhakti yoga or indirect, but the point is either of them should be without any tinge of fruit of activity. So the recommendation is be functioning ideally at the Madhyama platform. Or at least if you want below that, the difference is that the commitment is the same as the Madhyama, just your Shastric knowledge is not. Does that make sense? So in other words, one has that element of pure devotion, that one is fixed in devotional service, but one may not have the Shastric understanding to discuss it with others. That would place one in the neophyte position. But one should avoid being in the neophyte position because of having material attachment and making one's endeavors in God consciousness based on the fruit of result. Is it a resemblance? Yeah. Everything else is simply a waste of time for the performer. Srila Sridhar Swami and all other acharyas like Jiva Goswami agree that bhakti yoga is not not only easy, simple, natural, and free from trouble, but it is the only source of happiness for the human being. Right, so here is taking bhakti yoga in general, but bhakti means free from karma and jnana. Right? That's the intent, because that's pure devotion. So if that intent is there, even though one doesn't have that, but that's what one wants, even though by practice one doesn't have that stableness, it still is what's recommended. Srila Sukadeva Goswami begins his presentation of the direct devotional service by declaring that Sri Chaturmukh Brahmadev, the first Vedic sage in this universe, studied the Shastra thrice with great care and concluded that there was no greater teaching than Ratir Atman, loving attraction to Sri Krishna, the self of all selves. 34. Srila Prabhupada explains, Sri Sukadeva Goswami is referring to the highest Vedic authority, Lord Brahma, who is the qualitative incarnation of Godhead. The Vedas were taught to Brahmaji in the beginning of the material creation. Although Brahmaji was to hear Vedic instructions directly from the personality of Godhead, in order to satisfy the inquisitiveness of all prospective students of the Vedas, Brahmaji, just like a scholar, studied the Vedas three times, as generally done by all scholars, right? Because the first time you go through, you get kind of a general idea what's there, because you don't know what's coming up. But once you finish that, you know. The second time you go through, then you'll start to pick up things that you missed the first time because you didn't know how it was connecting together. Right? Having now put all those parts together, the third time that you study, you will be able to go very deep into it. Yes. That's why it's recommended three. Yes.
Many devotees nowadays, they have an idea that when you study Srila Prabhupada's books, first you read, like, if it's Gita, then only the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. Then the second time you study with the purports, and then, you know, like, thematic studies. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say that would what's the meaning of three times.
It's not.
No, three times would mean reading the whole book three times. Now, in doing that, if you're going to enhance it, I would say is that reading only the conversation would be part of your thematic study. You know what I'm saying? Because then you're just getting that line, and then you have to, like this. Because then, otherwise, what's the meaning of just reading the conversation if you don't know what the definitions and what they're talking about means? That's why the purport is important. But the purport means, it's just like how you say it. The purport has so much in it, so it's not a matter of I read it once and it's done. As I mentioned, when Atmatattva did his study guide for the Gita, he read each purport six times. And have you ever tried? Just going through it? And you see, the first time you see, maybe you catch one point in the whole thing. You read the second time, then you see there's more points, like each paragraph has a point. Then you start reading this, each sentence, and each word, and you know, and how much, if you know Sanskrit more, each syllable, right? So when he wrote it down, and then with great enthusiasm, because he was like known within the society of basically one of the most prominent scholars that we have. So then all these very senior, you know, preachers, sannyasis, GBC gurus took it up and started writing it. The one that was the most academic got halfway through. And then they just had to stop. It's just they can't see what he's talking about because they only read the purport once. So they just couldn't catch it. So that's why it had to be organized to make it a little bit more accessible. But the point was, is the more you read, then there. So this idea is that it's only a conversation. Because otherwise, when Krishna says something, what do we know what that means? That's why the purport's there. You know, that's the whole idea. But it's not that. Let's say if you just want to do some quick reading, you don't have much time. Just read a chapter, only the verses. That's fine. But that shouldn't be considered the first study like that. But it is a nice study because then, especially if you can do it in a quick enough, how you say, yeah, I guess the seriatim is close enough together, then you will be able to appreciate and kind of put together how the conversation is going, like that. But if you're reading it slowly, then better you read the whole purport. That I would take that as an extra thing, as a side thing, you know. Okay. Brahmaji, like a scholar, studied the Vedas three times as generally done by all scholars. He studied with great attention, concentrating on the purpose of the Vedas. And after scrutinizingly examining the whole process, he ascertained that becoming a pure, unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the topmost perfection of all religious principles. Because otherwise, other processes are being recommended, but that's only because someone can't do the topmost. So that's where contradictions come up. People think, or at least apparently, they see contradictions, because it'll be recommending karma, but in another section it'll say that that's useless. So then if you go through these things and you see that there's recommendations, but there's things that are dropped off. But bhakti, pure devotion, is never said that there's some problem with it. Does that make sense? Karma and jnana, there's always some problem. Or it's contradictory. Means that the same Upanishad in one verse we're talking about the oneness of the Supreme, and a few verses later is talking about the diversity of the personal aspect and that. Right? So you'd have to do a very thematic study to only get, you know, the impersonal understanding. So then you start to see that these higher levels are there. Yes.
On one hand, we say that we can add karma and jnana if we're not able to do the highest.
Yes. But you're adding that to the highest. That's why it's called mixed.
Yes.
You're not doing it instead of.
Yes.
You know, it's just like someone's learning to ride a bicycle, and they're not very good at it. So you put training wheels. It's not that you only have training wheels and no bicycle. That's the process of karma without connecting it to the Lord. It's just training wheels.
And at the same time, we say that chanting is the highest because anyone can do it.
Yes.
So
because there's the process of what you can do, and then there's what the process you have qualification for. Right? Does that make sense? And then you also have the conditioning. Right? So these more, how you say, stages that address the conditioning require a quality of conditioning to perform them. That's the difficulty. While chanting the holy name, being the highest, doesn't require any conditioning to follow it.
Yes.
Right? That's why we're recommending, if you discuss the pure philosophy, then it's transcendental to all conditioning. So there's basically nothing there to disturb anybody's mind. Right?
Yes.
It's only when you deal with detail, then you get into the conditioning, applying to the detail, that's where they might find the problem. Is this anything? And this is the last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, directly presented by the Personality of Godhead. The Vedic conclusion is thus accepted by all acharyas, and those who are against this conclusion are all only Vedavadaratas, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita 2.42. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruit of activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. Because if you talk about something, if you want material facility, then you don't want to know that there's something more important beyond.
Right?
It's just like, okay, the person, he's got money, and he wants a car. What car does he want?
Fancy.
But what fancy car? Means whatever is, there's nothing beyond it within his circle. You know what I'm saying? If they're younger, you know, younger kind of more active people, then it's got to be, you know, Ferrari or something. You know, if it's more distinguished, then it's got to be a Rolls or a Bentley. You know, even better, it's a stretch one. You know.
Maybach.
Huh? Yeah, like that. You know. So you understand, you know, what suit they're going to wear. right? It's got to be the best. Whatever it is, it's got to be the best in their calculation. So now, if in their calculation they have material the best, and then you come along and say, well, that's nothing. That's like a calf's hoofprint compared to an ocean, you know, of bhakti. They're not going to like it. You know, it's just, you know what I'm saying? It's just a matter if you come along and whatever you have, they say there's something better. Then people get disturbed. So the Veda Vadaratas, they don't want to hear about bhakti, that it's superior. So they'll say, that's why they'll say there's nothing more than this, because then they can go on and then everything's nice. Their birth is good, power, you know, so forth. They have all that, and so then everything's fine, even though they're miserable and everybody around them is miserable. Right? Does that make sense? You know, yeah.
No, it doesn't make sense, but that's what's happening.
Yeah.
As it goes on.
Yes.
It's interesting to notice that Gyanis, they always say about Karmis as a low-class people.
Yes.
And Karmis say, oh, these Gyanis, they're just, you know, they're just lazy, you know, they don't want to work, they don't want to do nothing.
Yeah.
And the Bhakti Yogis, they say they boast like.
Yeah. But at the same time, as we can appreciate what is the strong point of Karma or Gyan.
Yeah.
Like that, which the others can't. You know, so that's, yes, that's all that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, the Lord himself says, what do the Vedas instruct as action? What is the final meaning of the Vedas? What alternatives do the Vedas raise? No one except me or my dear devotee knows the intended meaning of the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.21.42. So Krishna is pointing out that what the actual purpose of the Vedas, what's being described, only the Lord and the devotees know. Others cannot actually know because they don't want to know. He determined that thing which is explained in all the Vedas, from which permanent prema, rati, arises in the self. Rati is the first stage of prema. That rati takes five forms. Shanta, Priti, Shakya, Vatsalya, and Priyata. The Lord explains this later. The devotees in the spiritual world are not deprived of any enjoyment. My wheel of time does not affect those devotees for whom I am a lover. The Atma, son, friend, elder, companion, or worshipable deity. Srimad Bhagavatam 325.38. Right, because the wheel of time always makes things go down. But when you're connected to the Lord, the devotee being eternal, the Lord being eternal, the relationship is eternal. Therefore, nothing degrades, nothing diminishes. Right? Next, Srila Sukadeva Goswami describes the sadhana for attaining the ultimate goal, Ratir Atman, loving attraction to Sri Krishna. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. 35. Srila Prabhupada explains how even a common man can realize the presence of Paramatma in everyone's heart. The procedure is as follows. One can perceive one's self-identification and feel positively that he exists. He may not feel it very abruptly, but by using a little intelligence, he can feel that he is not the body. He can feel that the hand, the leg, the head, the hair, and the limbs are all his bodily parts and parcels. But as such, the hand, the head, the leg, the head, etc., cannot be identified with the self. Therefore, just by using intelligence, he can distinguish and separate his self from the other things that he sees. But to do that, you have to want to do that. Because otherwise, if you want to be the body, that is your identification, that's how you have a position in society, then you have a problem. Right? You'll have a problem. If you're willing to understand that there's something beyond it, then it's not a difficult thing to see. So the natural conclusion is that the living being, either man or beast, is the seer, and he sees besides himself all other things. Right, so he sees himself and he sees all other things. So there is a difference between the seer and the seen. Yes. Now, by a little use of intelligence, we can also readily agree that the living being who sees the things beyond himself by ordinary vision has no power to see or move independently. All our ordinary actions and perceptions depend on various forms of energy supplied to us by nature in various combinations. As this conclusively proves that the ordinary living being has no independent power of perception or of motion, and as we undoubtedly feel our existence being conditioned by nature's energy, we conclude that he who sees is spirit, and the senses as well as the objects of the senses are material. Because you want to see something, then it's just because you want it happens? Or are we dependent? Well, think, yes. But the point is, if you don't have an eye, it doesn't work. If you don't have something to see, then there's nothing there. And if there's not enough light, you can't see it anyway. So there's always this dependency, right? Smell, taste, touch, each one, you have to have the sense object, and then there's the power of what is seeing, right? Because I'm seeing it, but someone else is seeing it. And then we're both getting that experience, that depending upon the nature and that, if there's ability to express it in a way that the other can relate to it, you see you're experiencing the same thing. So that means then that power of seeing must be beyond that. The object that you're seeing is beyond that. Right? So we're separate for all this, but at the same time, even though we're separate, we're still dependent upon it. So that's the next stage. First is that we're different from it, but next is that we're dependent upon it. So that means there's power that's beyond us that's providing everything that we can do what we want to do.
Yes.
Is that what it means? Right? Because we're not providing the eye. It's there. And it's not that we're sitting here and saying, yes, it has to stay 20-20. No, it adjusts. You know, so that's just the way it is.
The spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with the limited state of material conditioned existence.
So this is the next thing to notice, is that we're independent from the body and senses. We're dependent upon the material energy to provide the facilities that we can actually be active and interact. And then that interaction, no matter how wonderful or how well arranged, which generally it's not, is not satisfying. So let alone when it's not well arranged. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, why do we continue on thinking that there's something here? Because we can never get it always arranged the way we want. Because if you can get it arranged the way you want, all the time, you get bored immediately. Right? At least that's the term, jaded. You have facility, you get jaded. You have money, you can buy anything you want, you get jaded. You don't even like shopping. Right? Because what's the fun? You know, it's fun is buying something you're not really supposed to have. You know, and you try to convince yourself, I really need this. You know, I really need this pair of, you know, knee-high, you know, how you say, Gucci boots, right? You know it's yeah. You know, where can you wear them? But you got to have them.
Go great with my dhoti.
Yeah, go great with your dhoti, right? The wind blows, you still don't, you know. It'll be good. You just have to work on the heels, right? Yeah.
So this principle of adiyatmika, adibhavika, adibodhik, it always exists in material world.
Always exists. So the difference is the conditioned soul is conditioned by it. The liberated soul is working, engaging it in the Lord's service. In other words, it's not that he's controlling it. It's whatever's there, he's using it for Krishna. That's why the previous one, he's not controlled by time. My wheel of time does not afflict those devotees. So time afflicts people because it changes. So that bothers us because we're attached to a particular form. Right? Because we think that's what's going to give our happiness. Does that make sense? And even within the form, the time is there. Let's say I'm doing something. Right? As while I'm doing it, means when you start it up, there's that feeling of, inspiration that this is going to be good, right? So that's the Madan Mohan aspect. then one is involved in the activity, and there's a particular taste there, and one's, you know, continues that inspiration because there's a goal. Then one gets the goal, but basically as one's getting the goal, then one is now no longer in contact with that experience. And so then there's the need to do it again. Why? Because a particular form will reveal a particular quality of the Lord. Right? You know, like riding your bicycle off a cliff and halfway down opening the chute and then falling into the river and then, you know, swimming down through the rapids like that. You know, that kind of incentive. That's after you've ridden the bike over basically a cliff. Right? You know. So, you've done that, but the point is it's only as long as you're in touch with it that it's giving you the experience, because you're saying this item can give me that quality. Right? One wants excitement, so this form will give me quality. Right? For someone else, you know, you give them a rock, and they sit there and play with that, and the kid's excited. Right? But you know, you get some 21-year-old punk, he's not going to find that, unless, you know, of course, he's throwing it through someone's window or something. But that's generally more for 13-year-olds, right? You know, is that make sense? So the whole thing is one sees this form I'm excited by because it gives me this result. But the problem is it has a process and it ends. And because you're attached to that form, it's ended. So then you have to do it again. And again, and again. But then after a while, then that becomes boring. So you have to look for the same quality in a different form. Right? When you get tired of skiing, you know, then you do snowboarding. You know, when you get tired of that, you know, then you try something else. You know, you just keep going on and on and on through all these different things. Does that make sense? That's what's happening. So you have the element of some Mandabhide and Prayojana. So you're dealing with that effect that you're getting with. That inspiration is Madan Mohan. The going through it and then what you're happy doing that, that's Govinda. You got the result, but at the same time as that the result being gained goes back to the theory, then you're dealing with Gopinath. But on the material platform, it doesn't last. So then it goes back to the beginning. So that what does that mean? Inspiration to do it again.
Yes.
Right? So when that happens, right, does that make sense? Now, when that's connected to Krishna himself as a person, that's why it's always recommended. You can do these other things. These are called indirect. And you're connected to the Lord. It's purifying. But the problem is because of the attachment or identification with the form, the specific form or the detail of that quality, that's where the problem comes up. Because it's always temporary. It's always affected by time. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. But if you're dealing with Krishna the person, there is no beginning, there is no middle, there is no end. Therefore, it's unlimited. And because he is a person, all these other qualities keep adjusting and changing. So you don't have to change what you're doing. He is always manifesting different qualities. So then there's unlimited connection. Plus, you don't have the time element. So that inspiration of attraction, the engagement and the results are also eternal. So that makes some sense. So it's a simple thing. So that's what one can see from this process. When they say see, that means you see it. You can actually realize that this is what's going on. That's why I'm liking this. By my conditioning, I like doing this activity. But I do this activity because I'm experiencing my connection with the Lord through His energies in this particular way. But because of my conditioning and attachment to it, I think that that form that I'm using, that action that I'm using, that is itself providing the experience. When it's not, it's simply a medium for. You know, like somebody likes to, you know, stick their fingers in, you know, Indian sockets. You know, as someone else knows, they prefer using an international socket. You know, someone else knows, they know more specifically, they'd rather use a British socket. You know, but then, of course, there's the American socket. And then if you know, that's so straight and boring. Let's use a little bit, you know, askew here. Let's go with the Australian socket. You understand? But the point is exactly the same. It's electricity that's giving the experience, not the socket. But we think it's the socket. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes. I always have a hard time understanding the word that is no time in material, in the spiritual world.
There's no time.
So, but there's action and activity.
Yes.
So for me,
you're not controlled by time. Here, yeah. You're controlled by time. There's a perception of time. It's transcendental time.
Yeah, so if we do something, there is a past and present and future.
Yeah, but what's the past? Okay, just like your great-grandmother. She's past. Right? Is she still around? Can you interact with her?
No.
Krishna, he's past, but is he still around?
Okay.
Yeah, when you get to the future, who's going to be there?
Yeah.
Krishna. But so, that's still in the present.
So when we read that there is no time in spiritual world, we have to understand that it's no aging. It's like most important.
No, that's that aspect is there, but see, what are you looking at? What is the importance? When you say time, time means what? Kim means movement.
Yeah.
And movement means what? What is generated by movement? What is gained by movement? You're doing an activity, and then what do you get from an activity?
A result.
A result. Okay. So the situation is external, right? And then you're operating it. You're mechanically operating it, and that mechanics generates a specific result. Mm-hmm. So it's all external. It's all about the situation,
yeah.
Right? It's not about actually the relationship and the taste of that relationship based on an actual connection. You understand? People only operate in the material world because it gets them what they want. But what they want is just another external situation. You don't really have a relationship with your car. People talk about it, no. But it's just they get those experiences and this and that. You sit in it, you feel the road, the sound of the motor. You know what I'm saying? These kind of things. That's what you get from it. But it's still just a situation. What's the relationship? So the problem is we extend the same thing to cars. Everything in the material world is external. There's a little nicer external, and there's a little less nicer external. You know, it's like pious and impious in the material world. It's all nonsense. But pious nonsense is better than impious nonsense.
So if we build, if we is work that, on the relationship with devotees or with our wives or some persons, it's
that's the better nonsense, yes.
Okay.
Because it's still based on the result you'll get. Say nicely with your wife, it's that you want to see her smile. So you're going to, but why do you want to see her smile? Just because you think that, you know, this particular conditioning should just, you know, be prosperous?
Yeah, depending on form.
Huh?
It depends on form still.
Yes, it's dependent on form, but why are you worried about that form? Why are you worried about that form? Why are you worried that she smiles?
Because it gives me pleasure.
Right, that's the point. So in other words, you do your best to make her happy, because you'll get pleasure from it. Not that you're trying to make her happy because you just want to see her happy. Your goal in life is just to make your wife happy. Therefore, you know, today it's the Monday gift. You understand? So that's the point. But in the spiritual world, it's not about that. It's about actually pleasing the person. It's not about the facilities, it's about the person. Here it's about the facilities. People, you are, you know, just the extended facilities. They're like active thinking conscious facilities. You know, you have the unconscious facilities, you have the conscious facilities. You know, the conscious ones are more fun if they do what you want. Right? And if not, then you know, the how you say? Going out and working on your car in the garage, you feel you get more out of it because it does what you want. You know what will happen. You know what I'm saying? You know you put the supercharger, it will work better, right? You know, you bore and stroke, it works better. Like that. And you know you can come back after a month, it'll still be the same, you know? Pack it away in storage, come back after 10 years, it's still the same. You know, but go out, get that, you know, fancy, you know, whatever it was, you know, perfume, bring it back, the box, the whole thing, the flowers. And 3 days later, then, you know, you got to try something new. Does that make sense? So that's why we like to look at everything because of the problem is, of course, we're looking at it as paraphernalia. If we look at it as people, as devotees, then this problem goes away. It doesn't mean that the situation that after 3 days, then, you know, party's over, that will remain. But that's not a problem, because that's just the way it is. But it's about dealing with the devotees. Does that make sense? We're talking about a whole different strata of viewing things. So that's why this whole modernized kind of thing that you have to look that way, that's like, you know, how you say, get out the putty knife and scrape off the bottom of your shoe, you know. That's what we're talking about. So we're talking about human, we're talking about elevation, we're talking about transcendental. And Prabhupada's just giving the mechanics here. Just how mechanically you can understand, I'm not any of these things. Then there's the taste. So spiritual time acts in a way, so there's activities and results and a transformation of situations, but it's only for rasa. So therefore, if it's for rasa, therefore it can move at the speed that one night, one human night is a night of Brahma. Right? Or, you know, one blink of an eye feels like 12 years. You understand? So this is transcendental time. So it doesn't... It's enhancing rasa, while here time is always destroying rasa. Because the concept we have of rasa is not actually real. We think rasa means I'm having relationship with facilities. No, you have relationship with people. There is a, you can say, an impersonal relationship with the facilities. But that's to support the personal. You know what I'm saying? That's why even in the material world, it's understood if someone only uses people, nobody thinks that's good. It's always considered that people are more important than facilities. But ultimately, everybody's just a facility in the material world. But at least if you there's a sentimental concept that it's good, that's considered poetic. By, you know, poetry has been written. You know, songs have been sung, right? You know, like that. So, yeah.
The spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with the limited state of material conditioned existence. So that's the spiritual quality. We're separate. Yeah. Right? Then we see that there's a spiritual quality because we can't actually get satisfaction from the material. That is the difference between spirit and matter. There are some less intelligent arguments that matter develops the power of seeing and moving as a certain organic development. But such an argument cannot be accepted because there is no experimental evidence that matter has anywhere produced a living entity. They can't do it. You know, so they have this thing where they put some chemicals together. It runs around in the Petri dish for a while. Right? But we don't see that it, you know, crawls out of the Petri dish into another one and gets married. Right, you know, we don't see that. Or the next thing, we're looking in the Petri dish, we look back and then he's driving around in a car. Right, you know, it's not happening. They talk about it like we talk about so many things.
So that, yes. They will say there's no evidence of God.
But there's no evidence that there isn't God. Right? There's no evidence that there isn't God. So they cannot disprove it. So that means God is a scientific theorem. That's the definition of theorem. So if you're a scientist, then let's be consistent. There's no evidence of God, fine, but there's no evidence that there's not. You know? Just like there's no practical beings, they cannot make the calculation of taking all the matter that they know of in the universe and squishing it down into an infinitesimal point.
There is, what's the power to do that? What is around here that can do that? But they're saying that that's what happened. So maybe God did that. Maybe. But that's the point. Maybe. If you don't are agreeable to maybe, you're not a scientist.
Yeah.
You're a very subjective, self-centered person. That's all. It's that blunt. If you say there's no God, that means you're not a scientist. Because a scientist, it's a matter, you're open. If you're objective, you're open.
So we're the instrument and this is the experiment.
Yeah. I mean, this is it's all this you can see. You can see this. Someone else has a thing. Yes.
Once in Ramachar Ashram...
A little louder, please.
In Ramachar Ashram, we've been told how to preach against the atheists. So we were told an atheist is one who does not believe in God. So it means that God has to exist for you not to believe in him.
That's there. But why is it called atheist? Why doesn't it have its own term? Like, you know, pumpkin or something. You know, it doesn't. Oh, he's a pumpkin. You know, like, you know, it doesn't, because it's just against theism. It's not that it stands on its own. Like darkness doesn't stand on its own. It only means absence of light. So if there's absence of God consciousness, then you have atheists. That's all. It's not a separate entity. It's just a negative of an existing positive. Yes.
Okay.
Trust no future, however pleasant. Right? This is also. Idle talks regarding future development of matter into spirit are actually foolish, because no matter has ever developed the power of seeing or moving in any part of the world. It just hasn't happened. Right, they can say, oh yes, we'll make it happen. But then, what did they say about, what was that thing that frees you?
Oh.
Yeah. Cryogenics.
Cryogenics, right? Now, are they talking about cryogenics these days?
Not so much.
You know, people are willing to spend hundreds of thousands to have themselves frozen. Yeah, it's very small. It's not like before. It's not popular. It's just like kind of once you're frozen, you don't really appreciate the benefit.
I think they pulled the plug on Walt Disney and it kind of went down then.
After that?
He froze himself, but the family got into a dispute over the inheritance. And so they pulled the plug on him. Defrosted him.
Well, because technically he's not supposed to.
Yeah, because they couldn't split the money as long as he might come back. You know,
so. Okay. How much did Mickey Mouse get? Therefore, it is definite that matter and spirit are two different identities, and this conclusion is arrived at by the use of intelligence. Now we can come to the point that the things which are seen by a little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as the user or director of the intelligence. Intelligence gives one director, like some high authority, right? So now we've separated, there's matter, there's spirit, okay? So we're still just taking these generic things. Now we're looking at the next point is that we have intelligence. You can't actually do any of this, either understand this or operate this, unless the intelligence is applied. Right? Intelligence gives one direction like some higher authority, and the living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence. When one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged man. And so a living being is dependent upon intelligence or the direction of a superior being. Such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living being has his intelligence, and his intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, is just like a father giving direction to the son. The higher authority, who is present and residing within every individual living being, is the super self. Right? So that's the intelligence is the closest to the super soul. So the point is this, why does the intelligence work? Okay, maybe we're getting into here. At this point, okay, so then now we've made that step to the super soul. So then Prabhupada brings up the next point. At this point in our investigation, we may consider the following question. On the one hand, we realize that all our perceptions and activities are conditioned by arrangements of material nature. Yet we also ordinarily feel and say, I am perceiving or I am doing. Therefore, we can say that our material senses of perception and action are moving because we are identifying the self with the material body, and that the superior principle of super self is guiding and supplying us according to our desire. By taking advantage of the guidance of super self in the form of intelligence, we can either continue to study and put into practice our conclusion that I am not this body, or we can choose to remain in the false material conception, fancying ourselves to be the possessors and doers. Our freedom consists in orienting our desires either toward the ignorant material misconception or the true spiritual conception. So now in this, that step is there, is that because the super soul is whatever it is you want to do, he's arranging. Because we can already see that I'm not doing it and higher power is there that we saw in the beginning. Right? So now we come a circle back to that. So if that's the case, then what is the meaning of my consciousness, my intelligence, my engaging these things? So material nature is giving that. So the super soul is then arranging these things. According to your desire, according to your, what you deserve, then it's being arranged. Does that make sense? So we've already understood that I'm not actually perceiving. I'm dependent upon these other things. Right? So those mechanics go back to the super soul, because he sees, right? Then something can be seen. And then the conscious, the soul, reflecting upon the mirror of the intelligence, reflects onto the object that you want to see, that the Lord is already seeing. So that power of seeing coming from the Lord, you're able to see. You're able, like a mirror, you can put it around the corner and see things. Right? Though you look directly, you just see a wall. There's nothing. But the mirror, you can see it. So because you've put your consciousness into it, that's why that would be there. But that power is coming from the Lord. So I'm able to see that mirror, and what you're looking at, that's already arranged by the Lord. That's not us. You understand? That's why the problem is if you just stop at that point. I think, who gives that? Who explains that? Is that Vaisheshika or Shankya?
Yoga,
Patanjali. Okay, because they get up to the mind level. So that's explained that, but notice it stops that. Where does all that come from? Because you put your consciousness into it. It reflects off the material element of intelligence. Goes through the senses, onto the sense object, and that little bit of light, like you shine a flashlight, it'll go onto something. So then you can see it, that reverse. But that power of the sense itself, and that the sense object, the whole mechanics of that, where did that come from? Why does that work? That's where they stop. You understand? All these nice philosophies get up to the point of the Lord and then stop. They always stop just short. Right? So that's the point as it goes by. So here we see it's probably just me, it takes it to the super soul. Right? Because the other thing, then the problem is one has a tendency to think, I'm doing this. But no, that's just your facility for doing this. Right? We can easily attain to the true spiritual conception by recognizing the super self, Paramatma, to be our friend and guide, and by dovetailing our intelligence with the super intelligence of the Paramatma. So that's going to... Then we can attain the true spiritual conception. One has to appreciate the Lord as one's friend. Right? If one doesn't do that, then it's not going to work out so good. The super soul and the individual self are both spirit. And therefore, the super self and the individual self are both qualitatively one and distinct from matter. But the super self and the individual self cannot be on any equal level, because the super self gives direction or supplies intelligence, and the individual self follows the direction, right? Because we're saying our consciousness is reflecting off the intelligence, but who gave the intelligence? That's the whole point. And the super self gives direction or supplies intelligence, and the individual self follows the direction, and thus actions are performed properly. Right? So if they're in connection with the Lord, they're done properly. Right? You have to have that connection. The individual is completely dependent on the direction of the super soul, super self, because in every step, the individual self follows the direction of the super self in the matter of seeing, hearing, thinking, feeling, willing, etc. So everything is going on. He's the attractiveness. He is the action itself and its result. He is all these aspects. So if he's brought in line with the super self. So on the material, the material mechanics have to be in line with the super self. Though we're only looking at the Brahman aspect, then the mechanics work. But if we understand what we're doing, why we should be doing it, what is to be done, then we look at from the super self, what's our position? And we do those activities. You're dealing with the facilities according to not whimsical. Right? Means the person is dealing with the mechanics of something properly according to the laws. Right? So you have to be in connection with the Lord to make something work. But why he's connected with a particular thing, that's whimsical. Now, the next slaves is what things within the perception I can see I should be dealing with. That's the Paramatma. But then we get to Bhagavan as I'm doing this to please the Lord. That's why I'm doing it. So therefore, that's why I choose. Right? Does that make sense? So the beginning stage is I'm following the laws of God because the benefit I'll get. The next stage is I'm following the laws of God as I'm supposed to follow them, because that's better, right? Then I'm following the laws of God because then the results from that I can use to please Krishna. Understand? So therefore the Paramatma is always that middle stage between the two, right? You're dealing with Brahman, the focus on the mechanics of Brahman, but you've added the personal element. But it's not actually about pleasing the person. So Bhagavan is about pleasing the person. So the mechanics are secondary. So far as common sense is concerned, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities, namely matter, spirit, and super-self. Now if we go to the Bhagavad Gita, or the Vedic intelligence, right, to see how we got to Chitta-Chitishwar. Now these are the three points. Now if we go to the Bhagavad Gita or the Vedic intelligence, we can further understand that all three identities, namely matter, individual spirit, and the super-self, are all dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The super-self is a partial representation or plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavad Gita affirms that the Supreme Personality of Godhead dominates all over the material world by his partial representation only. Because that's all it takes to make it work. Right? Does that make sense? It's just you have a law firm, okay? And so you have, all the things that you deal with. Okay, now let's say within the office, somebody's kid is there and they get, have some problem. So now do you send your top lawyer to work it out? Or the lady sitting behind the desk, she goes and takes care of it. You understand? It's small. Material world is small. It doesn't take much to take care of it. So Krishna, in a partial representation, comes as the super soul and, maintains the material world. Yes?
Why wouldn't be Brahman aspect that maintains?
Because that's how he's pervading, so that's how everything works. But the point is then you have to interact with it, so you have a desire. So it's Paramatma, then he interacts based on that. Because the idea is that we're trying to shift from the impersonal to the personal. So Paramatma is the step, that's why he's the step here. Because we're actually in the material world, everybody only deals with Brahman. But, we appreciate the variety of Brahman. But the illusion is we don't know it's Brahman. But all we're dealing on is the Brahman platform. Does that make sense? So then we're trying to get to the point of what one should do. So that's why it's considered,
in another category, if someone's talking about duties and, the right thing and, that dignity and honor and honest truth, and it's kind of like, what book is that guy in? What's his story? Some night somewhere or, you know what I'm saying? It's just, so that's the whole point, is it's in another category. That just they're touching on that concept that there is that. So they're not even relating that to God also. So it's the same. Not really a God-conscious consciousness of God. Right? Does that make sense? Like everybody's aware of the Brahman aspect, but they're not conscious of God. So they're aware of the Paramatma aspect, but not conscious of God. Right? That makes sense. So that's the thing, is that they move. There is the idea that it is higher, but it's
we're distinguishing between God and divine, or is that spiritual?
Yeah. In which aspect?
That if you're dealing with God, you necessarily are dealing with something personal. If you're dealing with divine, it has this impersonal.
Yeah,
I think it's always easier to talk divine.
God is great, and he cannot be simply an order supplier of the individual selves, because that's what Paramatma is doing. Therefore, the super self cannot be a full representation of the supreme self, Purushottama, the absolute personality of Godhead. Realization of the super self by the individual self is the beginning of self-realization. Right? That's where it starts. And by the progress of such self-realization, one is able to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by intelligence, by the help of authorized scriptures, and principally by the grace of the Lord.
Right. So, in other words, we're making the endeavor. The Lord then reciprocates, and we have that realization, that understanding. Right. So he gives, it's just like, you're walking down the street, you see on the side of the curb, a hubcap, right? It looks interesting. Maybe it's from a fancy car, So then you say, wow, this is great. So then you go, you're walking back, you go back to your house, you call up, your friend, you go over and say, you tell the girl, well, I was thinking about you today, I brought you this hubcap. You know what I'm saying? Okay, if you're 13, it might work. But, if you're a little older, it might not work.
You can use it to bake pies in.
If it's mag?
No, not a good idea. Okay.
So, the whole idea is that there's a process. Now, if you brought flowers, would that work better?
Yes.
So, what does that mean? If you're dealing with personality, there's a method. So, if you're dealing with God as a person, therefore there's recommendations on how to approach Him. Therefore, using the intelligence through authorized scriptures, right? Depending upon the grace of the Lord, that will get you the results. You know what I'm saying? It's not that you go down to the casino and decide you're going to play craps until you realize God. Does that make sense?
A lot of praying going on.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Yeah.
The Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary concept of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the further explanation of the science of Godhead. So we stick to our determination and pray for the mercy of the director of intelligence sitting within the same bodily tree, like a bird sitting with another bird, as explained in the Upanishads. Certainly, the purport of the revealed information in the Vedas becomes clear to our vision, and there is no difficulty in realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. The intelligent man, therefore, after many births of such use of intelligence, surrenders himself at the lotus feet of Vasudeva, as confirmed by the Bhagavad Gita 7:19. Yes. Where was that? Okay, so it's not that.
Yes.
Yes.
The Jiva Goswami quotes this verse from different devotees as the example, one of the examples for in the Praya Linga, for the logical presentation showing that Krishna is the personality of God and the Lord of Balaka.
Okay, but he uses this.
This verse, the one about seeing, we can hypothesize the presence of Krishna in the heart.
Okay.
So seeing the reason for the logical presentation.
Okay, continue. It is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. 14. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, one should do this at all times and places. Sarvatra sarvada. This indicates there's no restriction on time and place, right?
As we mentioned before about the devotee not being affected by time. That means you can apply Krishna consciousness anywhere. Right? Other things you can only do when the time and place and circumstance are right. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the...
One should do it with the complete mind, sarvatmana, not with some parts of the mind being attached to karma and jnana.
So when we say mixed, it means part of the mind is on Krishna and part of the mind is not. It's on karma and jnana. So unmixed means it's just on Krishna. So you're following this process by connecting it all to Krishna.
Therefore, with mind dedicated only to bhakti, devoid of karma and jnana, one should constantly hear about, glorify, and meditate upon the Supreme Lord, Master of the Devotees, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.24. Because the same items are repeated in both verses, one should understand that these are the chief items of bhakti. However, other items, such as serving the lotus feet, are also indicated, though not explicitly stated. Right? So here in glorify.
So he's bringing out this, but then we got to this, as Arthur B. pointed out, is that the acharyas are bringing out and giving a lot of emphasis on this verse, is that you're going to separate the soul from the body and recognize the super soul and make that connection and then move forward into bhakti. Mm-hmm. Right? This is the process. This is what it means by bhuti yoga, the yoga of intelligence. Mm-hmm. Is that you see, I'm not the body. Right? And so if I'm not the body, what is karma and jnana connected to? The body. It's not connected to the soul. It's connected to conditioning. So when we get too much into the trying to engage the conditioning and the importance of it, but if we miss the point of pure devotion, then we're dealing with mixed devotion, not pure devotion.
Yes.
Why? Because of our conditioning. That's because we're still identifying to some degree.
Yes.
That's why Krishna recommends is you start off with this process. And you're recognizing, you know, so we're starting off with this process very mechanically. Then we're introducing the super soul, right? So the first six chapters of Gita, then introducing the super soul in the middle six chapters, right? Then we're going to the further point of now identifying chit achit ishwara, as we see in the last six chapters. And then we're able to operate this all very nicely. But now what's the next natural stage? The super soul is a person. What am I doing to please him? Therefore, sarva dharma pradityaja. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the Gita is the full explanation, you could say, of this point.
Yeah.
And you see it goes in this natural form. So how the Gita is explaining things is the natural form of it. Right? So we can just go through that. We'll become self-realized. That's the point. Gita makes us self-realized. Then with that self-realization, we apply that into bhakti. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
But we're only getting it because we're doing it to please the Lord. Then we can understand this import.
Does it mean that after Arjuna heard the Gita, he became self-realized?
Yes. Then he was able to apply the teachings of the Gita even while fighting in the battlefield. Right? So all the war of the Battle of Kurukshetra, we're looking at the war, but actually Arjuna was able to apply this teachings of Gita into his life. Therefore, he was doing this as, you know, yoga to please Krishna. He was engaging the mind, the intelligence, and the body in Krishna's service by this science. But we just catch the externals. Right? But actually, you know, here is the practical point, is that we can see by this battle it's going to be quite absorbing. But he was able to be God-conscious in that. So if he can be God-conscious in that situation, surely we can be in any situation we'll be in. It's not quite as...
usually not as intense.
Yeah, as intense as that.
Even though the Mahashop at festival time sometimes is kind of like group shift.
You just have to be. You have to chant your japa in front of the door before it opens. Yeah. Okay. Hearers of Nectarian and Krishna Katha purify themselves of material desires, right? So it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. So that's what you should. That is the conclusion that you bring to by this analytical process that we bring ourselves to the stage. Right? In other words, we're understanding we're separate from the body and we're dependent upon the nature. That's controlled by super soul. Therefore, whatever we're looking for is connected with super soul. And we don't get any satisfaction from operating, being involved in the operation of material energy. Therefore there's a difference in spirit. So it should be, what is the relationship between myself and the super soul? Right? I'm making my relation with the material energy. And by I'm dependent upon that, that's controlled by super soul. I get no satisfaction from it. So then what's actual the real position must be my relationship with the super soul. Does that make sense? So now what does that mean? Therefore, one should hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord. Right? The Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, right? So that's why I always bring in personality, so that we take it beyond the super soul point. Right? Otherwise, we might take it up to there and stop. Hearers of Nectarian Krishna Katha purify themselves of material desires, and without loitering in the mundane creation, go back to Godhead. Right? Because loitering means just you're hanging out for no real purpose. So being in the material world is no real purpose. So whatever you're doing here, it's loitering. So in other words, you can think more seriously when you see the sign, no loitering. It's actually a spiritual instruction.
Whatever you're doing, stop it.
Yeah. Okay. And without loitering in the mundane creation, go back to Godhead. Srila Sukadeva Goswami has now directly answered Pirkei Maharaj's question 26 about his duty at the time of death. Because right? Before you're bringing it up, because if he just says this, you'll ask why. So why start there? That's why we don't start there. You give the point, but in a way that applies to where the person's understanding. Then you develop it till you come to the direct. So in other words, you indirectly give the conclusion, then you, by giving the process, then you can show the direct conclusion. So it's like in the thesis. You start off with the thesis, then you present the whole argument and everything, and then you conclude with the same thesis. But now the thesis has more depth because now you've gone through the process. Like that. But otherwise it's exactly the same. So this is the conclusion, right? Which means restating the thesis. It is therefore, right? So therefore is the term. It means conclusive. Therefore, essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. Yeah.
The philosophical conclusion of Sukadev's answer to question 27, please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do, derived from verses 2:19-39, and their purports is presented below in two parts. One, regarding the emphasis in the early chapters of Canto 2 on the method of yoga, it is clear that the supreme is attainable through yoga, either mystic yoga or bhakti yoga. One can leave the body through focus of the mind by mechanical means and yogic manipulation of the life airs. In this age, it is more practical to focus the mind by offenselessly chanting Krishna's names. Because we see is that the problem comes up is that we're dependent upon our environment for success. Right? So, therefore, to engage, to make the mind peaceful, to disengage the senses, means there can't be anything that's engaging the senses. Right? We can't be sitting there in yogic meditation and a truck, you know, full of, you know, cement or stone chips goes rumbling by. Right? You know, or even, you know, more pleasant than the sage is there doing his meditation and five apsaras go by. Right? It just doesn't work out very good. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that one can't have this distraction. One's dependent upon the environment. So that's why it becomes more difficult. Right? But someone attached to engaging or interacting with the environment, then these processes are giving. That's why they're there. But those who are not, or those who don't have the qualification, who would like to be but don't have the qualification, either one, then the chanting of the Lord's names, hearing and chanting about the Lord, that's the process that doesn't require any qualification, doesn't require a good situation. Hmm? Does that make sense? Yes.
In this polluted age, one of the biggest pollutions is noise pollution.
Yes.
So, it occurred to me some time back that there's so much vibration going on in the environment that one of the reasons congregational chanting is the Yuga Dharma is that you're introducing a vibration that's overcoming all other vibrations.
That's there. But I'm saying is it's the point would apply, it would be true, but the weakness is going to be, then what about when there's less pollution in the other three ages and it still is considered the primary, what makes the other three work? You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're chanting and meditating, or you're chanting and doing a yajna, or you're chanting and worshipping the deity. So all it is in Kali Yuga, you just drop off those forms and just leave the chanting, because people don't really have the qualification to perform the worship and the yajnas and the meditation on the level needed to get the result. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it will apply in Kali Yuga nicely. But the point is engaging the senses. That there's so much distraction of the senses, so we simply engage them, connect them back to the Lord. That's, we just use the direct method. That's why we see is that even though he's explained the indirect, it's not primary for us. Does that make sense? It's not primary for us. So, yes, we're introducing vibration, so that's the thing. We're countering, just like people are eating, so then we're giving them prasad. They're seeing things, we're giving them the deities and festivals, like that. You know, they're smelling things, and there's incense offered to the deities, fragrance, flowers. So you're giving the alternative for engaging the senses by connecting it to the Lord. That's the essential point. Does that make sense? But of all of them, the most powerful is, you know, it's the sound vibration. Otherwise, then, you know, the phone also vibrates but makes no sound. You know, so but when it vibrates and makes sound, it's better. Yes.
Can we say that to develop a relationship with Krishna means the direct method?
And, to me?
To have a
relationship with Krishna,
yes,
is?
To develop the direct
method. Direct, yes. Direct.
It's relationship.
Yes.
And indirect means like to be attached to the situation?
Yes. Indirect, generally we're using indirect because we're attached to the situation. But you can also, is even if we're not attached to the situation, but we're in any situation we're in, to see Krishna, you start from the situation. So within a situation, something will catch your attention. You know, you're sitting somewhere in an airport. That there's so many things going on, something will catch your attention. You know, whether it's the bathroom, or whether it's the AC, or whether it's the lounge, or whether it's, you know, somebody doing something weird, or, you know, whatever it may be. You know, somebody's luggage as it goes by. You know, something will catch the attention. So, but it's according to values. So then when you catch that, then you connect back to Krishna. Does that make sense? So you try to put yourself in situations that the direct is more prominent. But in the preaching movement, we're connected a lot with things that are not prominent, you know, with not direct. And then if we add household life to that, then again, there's that. So we have this, the preaching and the social environment, then it's where all the indirect elements are. So that's why if we know them, then we can start there and then bring it up from there. Like we see here, Prabhupada's very nicely reduced or simplified the process of self-realization down to the essential without all the trappings that are attractive to the karmi, the jnani, or the yogi. And just that anybody can do. And this is a fact. Anybody would be able to do this. You could take anybody through this. Like that. So that's the thing. That's what we mean by the universal principle. Is that you can apply it to anyone. Now the examples you give to one person or another about how what their senses are engaged in, you know, or how they're not getting satisfaction, right? That would be different. But the point is you could take anybody through that process that Prabhupada just gave. Except for someone who doesn't want to go through it. That, of course, is there. If someone doesn't want to know, then, you know, don't bother.
Okay. In this age, it is more practical to focus the mind by offenselessly chanting Krishna's names. A yogi who is a devotee can focus his mind upon the goal of attaining the spiritual world and travel beyond his body to that realm. Other yogis, after becoming free from the gross material body, can travel anywhere within the universe according to their desires, or they may attain mystic opulences. If an accomplished yogi so likes, he may travel upward to Satyaloka, and his existence will become purified and more subtle. Those who reach this stage by worship of Hiranyagarbha, or the Virat, become liberated along with Lord Brahma at the time of the destruction of the universe. Right, so here, by the worship of Hiranyagarbha or Virat.
Right? So we catch the connection here, is that because they're seeing everything, means the worship of the universal form means seeing everything that you perceive with the senses in connection with its origin in the universal form. In other words, the principle on which it functions, the Lord and His potencies. That's what we're using. When we say indirect, that's what we mean on this level of self-realization. Is that something?
Yeah. So it's Virat. So Brahma, he is able to create. And his level of self-realization is begun from this point.
So the yogis will come to that platform and be able to function on Satyaloka with Brahma because they also see with that vision. So it's a vision that's available to the yogis, right? So a bhakti yoga can see like this, but more important than Virat, because Virat is coming from Garbhadaksha. Garbhadaksha is expanding from Karanadaksha. He's expanding from Sankarshan, who's expanding from Mahanarayan, who's expanding from Baladev, who's expanding from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Right? So therefore, we just take it back to there. Yes?
The mention of Lord Brahma being liberated at the end of his life, or the non-devotee Lord Brahma being some temporary liberation and coming back?
That's, yes. But here is because ours devotees, so we can talk, you know, in this way. But that's why they refer to, you know, he might not be.
Those yogis who reach this stage by devotion can penetrate the universe in its coverings and enter Vaikuntha to render devotional service to Hari. Right. So that uterus and his coverings, and enter Vaikuntha. Now it mentioned here Brahma just becoming liberated with Brahma. So he might just get to that platform and, like you said, then come back. Only a devotee then getting liberated when it continues to the Vaikuntha planets. While attaining Vaikuntha is not possible in this day and age through the gradual process of yoga, the same result can be achieved by devotees through bhakti yoga and by Lord Chaitanya's mercy through offenselessly chanting Krishna's names and regularly reading and hearing the Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. Right. So that's the important is we're studying on our own as part of Swadhyaya. Our the pancharatic process involves study. So we'll do that on our own so that we can sit and contemplate and move at the speed that we can appreciate. But at the same time, it's the association that's important, right? So that's why in the course here, there's that association, right? At the same time, then we go back, we study, contemplate these things like that. So it's not that it's one or the other. Right, you have both these aspects. That's what makes it strong. Either through yoga or bhakti, only a fully purified soul can attain Vaikuntha, where the Lord enjoys himself in the midst of unlimited numbers of his pure devotees who desire nothing but his pleasure. Such a soul never returns to the material world. Impersonalists and materialists can never enter. 19 to 31 in their purports. Right? They can mean never enter means Vaikuntha. That means they're already here, so they don't have to worry about that. Two, regarding devotional service to the Lord, it is systematized as a yoga in its own right, namely bhakti yoga. This is the ultimate path of spiritual advancement. Shastra confirms that no means of deliverance is superior to the direct path of bhakti yoga. Other paths, jnana and siddha yoga, are stepping stones to bhakti. The conclusion of all shastra, as reached by Lord Brahma himself after careful study and is elucidated by the acharyas, is that the Lord is in everyone's heart, and one should hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. Because we'll come up to the, you know, the details of that when we get to the Chaturshloki. But this is about how that is done. Then it'll be focused upon the Lord himself as a person. Right? Because otherwise means it's done, but we're starting off here doing this in connection with Brahman and Paramatma. Right? And showing that bhakti is the highest, because it already includes these two. Right? And Lord Brahma has ascertained to become, quote, a pure unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Krishna is the topmost perfection of all religious principles, end quote. Those who drink through their ears the nectarian messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead find the polluted aim of their life diminished. They live a life of peace, happiness, and knowledge. Right, so now we shouldn't conceive of what do we mean by peace, happiness, and knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Peace, everything in the house runs very nicely, the kids aren't yelling and screaming, you know, like this and that. You know, happiness, everything works nicely, everyone just sits there and everything just comes as you like, you know, like this. And knowledge is that, you know, you have your little degree there and everyone's recognizing your degree. And you know what I'm saying? This means is that one is absorbed in the Lord. One has no material desires, one's peaceful. Because one is absorbed in the spiritual, one is happy. And because one knows one's not the body, one's the soul, knows Krishna, one is servant of Krishna, one has knowledge, right? And one has knowledge that bhakti is the highest form of yoga, right? But, yes.
Can we say Satchitananda?
Yes, you could say. Mm. Yes, Satchitananda.
Yes.
That's a very good point. Satchitananda. Because you generally see is that acharyas are giving these longer, like, definitions of somebody, something using all these adjectives and stuff like this, but what they're doing is covering all those three, because we want all those three. If I just say peace, okay, but what about being happy? Okay, you know, okay, I'm peaceful and happy, but what about knowledge? Right? Otherwise, I don't want to be just a bimbo or something. You know, you have to have the whole package. By constantly hearing about Krishna, they go to Goloka Vrindavan. 39 and their purports. Right?
So these two parts. So the yoga system is how you'll elevate yourself to the transcendental realm. This yoga system can be done through the mechanical form or through just bhakti yoga directly. So bhakti yoga is its own yoga system. And it includes the others. So now in doing this, then you want to focus that this is done without karma or jnana. Right? And so doing that, hearing and chanting about the Lord in the association of devotees, trying to attain pure unalloyed devotion, that's the highest thing you can do. Pure unalloyed devotion, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Because there's the Personality of Godhead, then there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Okay. Oh, amazing. We actually finished. I was thinking, okay, we're going to get to hear the last paragraph. We're not going to get done. So then we'll continue in the afternoon with chapters 3 and 6. Does that mean there's no 4 and 5?
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki
Jai
Jai Nitai Govardhane ki
Sattva Yoga? When meditation and chanting?
No, it means you always have chanting.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no question of not having chanting.
No.
It's just that the process through which you express it is meditation. Just like we express chanting through Harinasa. Or they express the chanting through. So the chanting is essential. You know, so that's the point when you're doing in these.
Yeah.
Like that. But because the prominence is so great, that's why people notice only that.
So when you have deity worship and chanting, it's actually two things running separately? Or
No, they're both. The point is that to offer something, you have to chant. To be involved in the deity worship, you have to chant. You can't not have that happening.
Yeah.
To do yagyas, you have to chant. It's not that they just all sit around and, you know, hum and, you know, pour some ghee on the fire. You know, so it's fine.
With meditation, we have this idea that we're just sitting around for 10,000 years.
Yeah, but you see in Dhruva Maharaj, she's chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Or Dharanayana. I don't remember. I think Vasudevaya. Yeah, because this canto also opens up. So you have to be chanting. But otherwise, what's the mind going to be doing? You know, and you connect it there. So sight and sound, that's going to connect. That's why we use beads and like that, because then the hearing and the touch is there. You know, or we're sitting and hearing, you know, touch, seeing the deities.
It's finally published.
Oh, okay, yes. Sorry, I always wanted to see what I came up with. Thank you.
And of course, you mentioned that when we talk about mixed emotional service, it means that one part of our mind is dedicated to Krishna and one part is engaged by something else.
Yes.
So, and when we talk about purification of the mind, I was also a little bit confused by the example Prabhupada gives about this cup of ink, and we have to, you know, replace it with the milk pouring by pouring milk inside.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I'm trying to apply this example to my mind, you know, the cup has the clear limits, border, but the mind seems to be...
It's, it can only get as big as the universe. It can't go bigger than that.
But still, you know, in my own life, I feel that there is enough room for Krishna and enough room for Maya, no matter how much Krishna, you know, I'm trying to...
That's only because Maya is interesting. When Maya is not interesting, then there won't be... there won't be anything else. Because the point is there's unlimited things for that the senses come in contact with. But you only choose certain ones of them. You don't choose everything.
Yeah.
So why do you choose those? Why do those block out everything else? Because they're important. So when Krishna becomes important, then naturally you block out everything else but him.
So can we say that the replacement of this ink by milk takes place not in terms of volume, but in terms of taste?
Yes, by tasting a higher taste, you give up the lower. But the point is Krishna is by volume greater. One candle is greater than the whole stadium of darkness.
Maharaj, it's that fact of the demigods that they want to take birth in the Kali Yuga because of the chanting, they easily can go back.
Yes.
But we were wondering why they are not chanting on the heavenly planets.
They may be chanting, but the point is how long are they going to be in the heavenly planets?
Yeah. So how long?
So how long is their lifetime in the heavenly planets? How long is it here?
Okay. That's the main reason.
Yeah. It means 100 years is 100 days. That's 3 months.
Okay.
Do you understand?
Good.
So for a demigod, why you wouldn't want to do that?
But there are some demigods who take up the process and go back from the heavenly planets to the spiritual world, and some not.
Generally not so much. We're too busy doing
so
demigod
stuff. Distraction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Good. Good.